What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show.
Live from the Social Distance Studios, it's Footy Prime the Podcast with Danny Dicchio, Craig Forrest, and James Sharman. Today, we welcome New York Times bestselling author and host of Football with Grant Wall, Grant Wall, and director of sales and marketing from Amsterdam Brewing, Rob Mulvihill. For Dan Wong and myself, Jeff Cole, let's get this party started.
Oh, what a relief, fellas. What a relief. We're finally in the same room, albeit one Craig Forrest or Daniel Dicchio length apart, which is more than 2 meters, I think. It's a long way. But it's nice to see your ugly faces for once in person. You've obviously had a tough time through the pandemic. You both look dreadful. I know I do. But hey, we're together, and that's all that counts, right?
That's all that counts. Yeah. It's not like I haven't seen you guys, though. It feels like I've seen you a lot, because obviously seeing your faces on
your wall,
yeah,
your ceiling,
everywhere. Well, I wasn't laying down like Dicchio.
Yeah. Have you still got that picture up of me in your house as well, Craig?
Yeah, when you used to have hair at QPR.
That's the one.
Is that from the 70s?
It does feel like, doesn't it, a little bit more normal, though. Germany's back, Spain's back, England's back this week, of course, MLS on the horizon. There's even fans back in stadiums in England, in New Zealand, at the moment as well, which is something. We're a number of months away from that, I think, over here, of course. But
New Zealand have done an amazing job. That's why they're in that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. But today should be a great show. Grant Wall will join us very shortly. Grant obviously has been covering the game in North America for, I don't want to age Grant, but it's got to be over 20 years now, I think. We'll get that exact number.
You know what's short. Great about Grant, too, is not only that he covers the men's game and the experiences that he's been, and have been at World Cups and doing all this with Major League Soccer and 23 years writing for Sports Illustrated, is the coverage that he gives to the women's game. Yeah, equally, and the knowledge that he has behind that is what I see, and we'll discuss with him what's going to happen, because what is lost is that coverage. I think there's nobody as prominent as him covering the women's game, in my belief, at that extensively. So we'll see what he says about it.
We'll also talk beer, which is something very close to our hearts. Woo-hoo! Absolutely. Our good friends at Amsterdam Brewery, Rob Mulvihill, will join us.
Yeah. Even on a Sunday.
Hmm?
Even beer on a Sunday.
Especially on a Sunday.
Yeah, to clean up yourself after a Saturday, like our buddy over there.
Once we get rid of you idiots, I'm going to head home, sit on my deck, and probably drink some of the fine brews from Amsterdam. Maybe more than three.
Like
we'll
you
see.
Did every day during the pandemic.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm. Anyway, listen, this weekend Spain returned. Well, last Thursday, actually. Barcelona back in action. It was great to see Leo Messi, of course, back in action, scored the goal. But, you know, I've got a small brain, and small things make me laugh, right? And I'm looking at the attack for Barcelona. You got Leo Messi, these huge names, and Martin Braithwaite, who started up front. Now, I forgot that they signed him, I think it was in February, right at the end of the deadline, right?
That's correct.
Dembele was, I believe, injured. He's obviously out injured and to replace him. But this is a Danish attacker. Just the name Martin Braithwaite just seems funny beside the name Leo Messi, you know? He sounds like he should be a right back for Stoke.
Well, he actually played at Middlesbrough as well.
Did he really?
Yeah.
That's where he should be.
That's where he should be. But he struggled at Middlesbrough. And now he's playing in La Liga. Obviously, he's moved to Barcelona, where he's playing with the likes of Messi and Suarez, and I think he wakes up every morning and really can't believe it as well. But fair play to him. He managed to get a clause in his contract, which if a club would offer a certain amount, I think Barcelona or the club that he left, I can't remember which club he was at, it was some kind of ban or embargo set out. I think it was in Barcelona, but they had so many injuries that they could buy a striker from this lowly team in La Liga who are still struggling, to lose their top scoring striker to a team like Barcelona. So that's how the move kind of progressed, and now, as you said, Martin Braithwaite is playing for Barcelona.
Martin Braithwaite.
Messi didn't look as though he missed.
No, he was looking a bit rusty when he Messi.
Was it, I think it was 90-something days since we've seen him, 96 days since
was that what
he
it
last
was?
Played?
Yeah, I guess so.
Or something like that.
Wonderful to see him back on the field.
Oh, man. Yeah, just floating around the field. And just it's good to see Spanish football back. I mean, Germany's been fantastic, of course. Now Spain's back. And then the Prem later this week, which will hopefully be a distraction from the other nonsense happening around the world right now, which is obviously far greater, far bigger, but we're here to talk sports. Let's bring on our first guest, shall we? Listen, this is a guy that... host a brand new podcast, Football with Grant Wall. He is probably the most well-known football journalist in North America, one of the most respected for sure, and also finds himself, much like the three of us, in limbo, in between gigs at the moment, a victim of the machine that is North American soccer media, mainstream media. Grant Wall joins us. Grant, welcome to Footy Prime.
Hey guys, how are you?
We're doing all right, all things considered, Grant. Podcasts, mate. Football, F-U-T-B-O-L, with Grant Wall. They're great therapy, aren't they? If nothing else right now. Just being unshackled from the corporate beast for a while is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I hope it doesn't last permanently, and I don't think it will. But I've had a lot of fun just getting back to doing what I love, which is interviewing interesting, prominent soccer people. And that's in North America, men's and women's, that's in Europe. And, you know, like starting your own independent podcast, coming into it, I've covered this sport for 23 years. I've built a lot of relationships and I thought I would be able to get good guests. But you're still never sure until it actually happens. And so it's been really gratifying to get people on who I think make for an interesting podcast. And so already in just doing this for 3 weeks, two episodes a week, sometimes three, Jurgen Klopp comes on for Monday's episode. Lothar Matthäus is going to be on for Thursday. We've had Landon Donovan, Roberto Martinez, Henrik Mkhitaryan. It's a real cross-section of interesting soccer people, and it's just a blast to do again.
Well, it's great to see you, you know, back and, you know, doing something media-wise, Grant. And like I was saying to these guys, and just as in the opening, that, you know, a prominent writer like you that I respect and is respected in the soccer community in North America, around the world, and in Europe as well. So it's what is going to happen long-term when you see that, you know, the coverage that you gave to the women's program and the exposure. Are you going to be able to continue to do that at the same level, or are there other prominent people out there that I'm not aware of covering it at the same level?
Well, it depends on the time. And like, there are some people, I think, doing a good job of coverage in the soccer media for the women's game right now here in the U.S. and in North America. I would say Meg Linehan from The Athletic is doing a tremendous job covering the women's game, and The Athletic is doing a really good job in general covering soccer, whether it's North America. They have a big group over in England. I want to work for places that are investing in covering the sport, and you know, I'm optimistic that once we fully get going again here, that sometime in the next 2 to 3 months, I'm going to end up with a national gig covering soccer for somebody and be able to do more or less what I've always done, which is to cover the men's game, the women's game, domestically, internationally, and just tell good stories and write good stuff. You know, like, I think there's going to be a demand there because there are still media outlets that want good soccer coverage, especially with the World Cup coming to North America in 2026.
Grant, I'm just going to kind of lead on to that last sentence you just said there. Where do you think media is possibly going to go with the game within North America as well? Because we've obviously moved away from a lot of the games being on mainstream cable channels now, and a lot of independent channels are buying games, especially in Europe as well. Do you think it's going to be the same for journalists as well, kind of popping up, making their own online magazines and podcasts like you're doing now? Is this a new wave for the younger generation or for the millennials that we're seeing? This is what they want?
I think that what we're going to see even more so, and we're starting to see it now, is subscription pay websites, television, for people who want to see the game and want to consume the best coverage. I hope it doesn't become so expensive that it prices out potential new fans. But, you know, in my situation at Sports Illustrated, they got a new owner and operator last year who has completely changed how they are running Sports Illustrated. And it's much less about quality now than it is about quantity, because their whole strategy is, for digitally at least, about clicks, and it's advertising based, and it's all about volume. And that's not really what I do. I certainly can produce some volume, but I still want to have quality. And so I think for me, and I should have probably realized this sooner with the, once the new operators came into Sports Illustrated, I need to be working with in a company that has a strategy of subscriptions, because, or at least a place that wants to do quality stuff, and is willing to have an ad model based on that. Because if we're being honest right now, even though the sport of soccer is growing in North America, it's not the NFL, it's not the NBA, and you only really get a ton of clicks during big summer tournaments like the World Cup or the Euro. Year round, we're still slowly building, but it's the kind of thing that I don't know if soccer is still a click-friendly sport in the media here. And so I want to be tied to quality, and that's probably going to mean subscriptions.
It's so frustrating to me that you see the SIs of the world, and there's many other companies out there that are doing the same thing, going for clicks. And then you see, as you mentioned there, The Athletic, who are going the complete opposite. They want in-depth sports coverage. And for me as a sports consumer, that's my go-to now, The Athletic is. Before most other companies out there, I go to The Athletic to get some intelligent writing, podcasts, videos, whatever it's going to be. It seems that mainstream media still doesn't quite get it and doesn't quite get soccer. Is that a frustration for you?
You know, it's interesting because I've been doing this since 1996. And so in that span of time, I do look at gains have been made. I remember when I started at Sports Illustrated, it was almost impossible to get the sport of soccer into the print magazine. And it was very frustrating. We barely had a website. And over the years, that certainly did change. And soccer is more, in my opinion, media-wise, a digital sport these days, at least in our countries, than a print magazine sport. And so even though I was at Sports Illustrated for 23 years, by the last 5 years or so, probably 80 to 90% of my work was for digital, whether it was writing, podcasts, video. And the only time I really did much for the print magazine was around World Cups, previews, things like that. And so, I the soccer fan base is generally pretty young, and that's a digital consuming community more than it is a traditional print consumer group.
Well, moving on, Grant, talking about Major League Soccer, where it's at, what they're going to do moving forward. Are the players happy about what's the arrangement or the potential arrangement for a tournament? What are you hearing on the ground from the players and Major League Soccer itself about the plans moving forward?
Well, I can tell you that from talking to players, there's a real animosity from the players, especially those who are union heads, toward the threat from Don Garber, the commissioner, to lock out the players if they didn't agree to this deal, which included a new CBA, but also agreeing to go to this tournament in Florida. And I had players tell me that they think the relationship between the players and owners has been set back years by that threat of a lockout during a pandemic to stop paying your players and providing healthcare for their families. And, you know, did MLS have the leverage to do that? I guess. But that didn't mean they had to do it to make that threat. And they did. And it's not like the players were threatening to strike. So this is going to be a long-term situation in the years to come where there was actually a mutually beneficial feeling of goodwill in January, February when they got the CBA done. And that's gone now. So that's something to think about, especially because this force majeure clause of the new CBA, which is could very well kick in, could cause them to have to negotiate another CBA in January next year. I think the players are going to remember what happened here. Now, as far as the tournament itself in Florida, there is concern from the players. I spoke to one about a week ago, and that was even before the tests, the positive tests of COVID started increasing pretty significantly in Florida. And there were concerns at the time, a week ago, from the players that the league hadn't really spelled out the protocols yet about how they were going to run things down in Florida. And so the players were like, well, Disney World is opening up down there, and they're going to be bringing in people from all over the place. And are we going to be safe? So I know they're going to be in a bubble, but for the same reason that the NBA players are starting to ask, do we really want to do this NBA tournament down in Orlando? I think there's clearly some in MLS that are wondering as well.
I tell you what, when we're on our various platforms in a few months from now and we're talking about labor unrest in Major League Soccer, it'd be with great relief because it means that we're back to normal. To hell with everything else that's going on, labor unrest in whatever league it's going to be.
What I would say, Sean, is that the players that I've spoke to are very excited about getting back to playing. But that doesn't mean that they're not apprehensive about their welfare and their family's welfare as well. And that's an important part we're missing here. And I think that's what they were kind of butting heads with the MLS and the authorities there. And you have to remember there's a lot of underlying conditions that families and children from these players have that we don't really know about. And I feel as Grant just said there, they felt that they were pushed into a situation because we all want football back. We all want it back as soon as possible. And I think MLS are pushing really hard to get it back during this month because they know they're going to be the first sport back on TV, mainstream TV as well, Craig.
Yeah, Grant, what are your thoughts on, you've got a league here, Major League Soccer, that's not the NBA, like you said, not the NFL. They rely on gates and tickets being sold at the box office. If this pandemic continues on and there's no crowds for another year and a half, what can MLS do and can they survive it?
I think they can survive it because they have billionaire owners. And that's always been something that has kept MLS afloat, even when it was actually close to folding as a league in the early 2000s. They're in a much better position now in terms of the wealth of their owners. There's a lot more of them. They can absorb a lot of these hits. Certainly, you know, and my wife's an infectious disease expert. She thinks a vaccine is possible, as Dr. Anthony Fauci says, toward the start of 2021. You know, you hope that is the case because that would certainly help with a lot of things around the world that have nothing to do with sports. But in terms of the sports world, that would be key. MLS obviously relies more on gates than it does on television. So it's different from leagues around the world. And I think it's going to be important for the league to figure out how it wants to approach this. My guess is we're looking at post-tournament in Florida, empty stadium games in MLS, probably for the rest of this calendar year. And I think they can absorb that and be okay. And then very much hope that when 2021 starts, there will be a vaccine, there will be the ability to play in front of fans because MLS needs that, you know, and we'll see if they can do it.
I still feel there'll be fans towards the end of the season in certain states.
Well, if New Zealand's doing it right now, and obviously we're far behind New Zealand, you know, in a few months, quite possibly, let's hope so, in some regard. Yeah. I spoke to a guy who's quite hype at Live Nation recently, and he was saying that he doesn't foresee crowds above 15,000 until next summer.
Yeah.
Next summer for concerts.
I can believe that as well,
which,
yeah. But also the league are trying to generate revenue. I think it's been announced this week, Grant, you might be able to correct me on this, where there can be multiple sponsors on the uniforms now. So there's sleeve sponsors, shirt sponsors, short sponsors. So they're trying to generate money somehow for these clubs. Because you think about it, teams like Houston, Dallas, they don't get big, big gates anyway. Even New England, teams like them. So they're trying to help out teams. They're trying to get them sponsorships in different ways, whether it's for the purpose of just this tournament or for the season as well. So I don't know. There's a lot of thinking going into this. There's a lot of heads clashing. But I do feel that we'll see fans in some stadiums towards the end of the season. But are the other teams then going to say, well, this is unfair because we're sanctioned to not have fans in our stadium? There's even teams still that can't travel out of their state or their province, mm-hmm. even here in Ontario.
Yeah.
We can travel out, but we'd have to quarantine for 14 days on our return. So something has to change. That's not just for soccer, but that's for NBA as well.
Well, yeah, I know the NBA and the Toronto Raptors, Grant, they're getting together, I believe, this early this week, and then traveling to Florida next Monday, because the players can't come back here all joined together without doing 2 weeks. So they're going to meet up there even earlier and then move over to Orlando for the tournament if that actually ends up happening. So it's going to be a war of attrition for these guys, you know, when you're looking at, if you're actually looking at from a sporting standpoint and winning these tournaments, whether you're the NBA or Major League Soccer, if you're going to be isolated for up to 3-4 months, you know, that's a really difficult situation for anybody to be in from a mental standpoint.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that the MLS players fought, because the original proposal from the league was for a much longer tournament in Florida. And the players got that negotiated down to a shorter tournament where some teams are only going to play those three group stage games and go home. But you're still not going to have, even for the teams that go to the final, you're not going to be there, I don't think, for much longer than 4 or 5 weeks. So, you know, when you put it in those terms, that's the length of a World Cup. And, you know, these guys down in Florida are going to be very, very isolated. They're going to be in a bubble. They're not going to be able to do some things that you typically take for granted. And so I do think it's going to be a mental challenge as much as any sort of physical challenge.
Yeah, you make a really good point. Some of the players that have played internationally at World Cups will understand, or a tournament like the Gold Cup, you're with your teammates, you are isolated to a certain degree, and it's different. Coaching a tournament is different than coaching week in, week out, a league base. So it's going to be very interesting to see how coaches manage it, how they deal with it, how their physicians and their physiotherapists deal with the loads on these players. It's something completely out of the normal.
But going back to the players as well, and this is key for me, because even playing in MLS, it was difficult for me as a European player to adjust with not eating as a team, and you being given per diem to go out and see the city that you were playing in. But I actually really kind of come around to really enjoying it and seeing different parts, just having that off time, off of the pitch, off of the field, to go and experience the city, whether it be Columbus, whether it be San Jose, for a couple of days, just to see that community. And I feel that's where players are going to come a little bit unstuck with the isolation of training or playing, eating in the room by themselves in isolation, and being kind of locked in that cell, which they're calling it. It's gonna, I don't know, like, mentally how the players are gonna react to it, but I would find it very difficult myself to be away from my family for that long, but also to kind of be locked up away from your teammates.
I don't know though, after 3 months being stuck with your family, some of these players might be looking forward to a bit of sorry, got to go back to work.
Well, there is that side.
That's a bit unfair, perhaps. Grant, so obviously COVID's been the dominating news story for a long time, but overshadowing it in recent days and weeks, of course, has been the civil unrest, Black Lives Matter in particular. I mean, we're watching it from a distance to a certain point up here. We're seeing it more and more here now as well. But is there a word that kind of describes your mood right now, seeing what's happening to your country?
Yeah, I mean, it's this is stuff that I think we're going to look back on. This stretch is a pivotal moment in our lifetimes, you know, not just with the virus, but for the protest against police brutality toward Black Americans, which I am obviously so angry as an American citizen to see what happened to George Floyd, to see what happened this week with a Black man being killed by police in Atlanta in a way that was horrible. And so many names that we've come to know over the years, and this problem never has seemed to get better. And finally, it seems like there's at least a possibility for real change, that people, whether it's protests in cities around North America, Europe, elsewhere, this is a global thing. And so I hope we end up seeing real change as a result. I hope that the police departments really take a strong look at changing fundamentally how they do their work, or the people that oversee police departments force that. But I'm optimistic that change can happen. I'm optimistic seeing how many protesters were out there. I'm optimistic seeing how much the white community, which is the community that needs to change and have uncomfortable conversations about this topic, seems to be willing to do that. So we'll see where it goes from here, but it's something that is a conversation that needed to happen a long time ago. We're having it now, and it's interesting that the sports world has talked about it. I mean, in this interview I have with Jurgen Klopp on my podcast Monday, that's one of the things we talk about from the top, is how he's seen this around the world. And he said his son was protesting in Berlin. So I think there's a recognition in the sports community, and we've seen a lot of prominent athletes and coaches speak out. And I think the sports community can have a big influence here.
Yeah, the term is what, let it be a movement, not a moment. And we've seen it. It seems we're on this exact same platform, fellas, a few months ago, England, Bulgaria, you know, the racist abuse towards English Black players. And what would happen? Well, what happened was a two-match stadium ban and €75,000 fine, right? Absolute joke. And we complained, we said it's disgusting. And then we moved on and discussed other issues. That can't continue. We're seeing a lot of young American footballers, soccer players as well, Grant, standing up and having a say and using their platform. In the past, they may have been criticized for that. But it does seem that the message is getting across in the world of sports to these athletes to use their platforms and to get that conversation going.
I think on the men's side for the U.S., the leaders are all much younger than on the women's side. So guys like Weston McKennie, Christian Pulisic, Tyler Adams is such an impressive player and figure. They really have found their voice. Zach Steffen's another one. And then we see older players, retired players like Oguchi Onyewu and DeMarcus Beasley starting their own podcast and talking about these topics. And then they, I'm told, actually spoke to the U.S. Soccer Athlete Council last week and really pushed, along with Megan Rapinoe, who's done amazing work, they pushed the Athlete Council to come out publicly and say, we've got to repeal this rule that forbids kneeling during the anthem. And with Cindy Parlow-Cohn, the new U.S. Soccer president, and I think it's important to note, these are former athletes, all of them, and they realize the power that they can have, and that other parts of the U.S. Soccer Federation leadership and membership are older and more conservative. It's up to the athletes' part to push this stuff through, and they succeeded. And so you had Cindy Parlow-Cohn coming out and apologizing to Black athletes, all athletes, specifically to Megan Rapinoe, who was essentially blackballed by U.S. Soccer for about 6 months when she was supporting Colin Kaepernick's kneeling protest. And I look at what Rapinoe has done and said, and she's basically said all along, we need, as the white community, to get into uncomfortable places and uncomfortable discussions for real change to take place. Because basically, I mean, it's nice to see Jadon Sancho showing a t-shirt, you know, a shirt saying supporting George Floyd. That's great. But really, that's not uncomfortable for anybody. Like, it helps. But we in the white community need to take this farther into the discussions that, like, that need to be had. And I think people like Rapinoe, Tyler Adams, they've helped push it there.
I think you're right. And me and Danny have been involved with an initiative here to help with the Conquer COVID initiative to help there with hospitals short of PPE. Most of them are actually, I would say, Muslim. I didn't really know that going in, but Ramadan was at the time, so I saw many of them that were up celebrating and going through that. And they talked to me about that, and I wasn't sure what to say, what to do, how, what kind of statement to put out, but they thought it was important that we do. And as a white guy, an athlete, former athlete, to put out a statement in support. And I think that we're seeing that from prominent people. We're seeing it from prominent leagues. I saw what I was really proud of with the Premier League are going to, for the first 12 games of next season, have Black Lives Matter on the back of their jerseys. That's an incredibly massive and powerful statement that goes out to 212 different territories, as the Premier League does. And to have a league go that far, and with the brands like Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea wearing that on the back of their jersey, is incredibly powerful. And I'm proud that league has actually done that.
Yeah, I am too. And I wasn't sure at the start of the protests how global this would go, right? But then you started to see major protests in Berlin, in London, in Paris. And then you saw, at the start, black athletes, soccer players, do public displays. And then you saw, which I thought was even more important, white players like Joshua Kimmich at Bayern Munich support his black teammates and say publicly, white people need to be doing this. It can't just be black players. And that is a recognition of what really needs to be happening. And so I think that's cool. I think Germany has been very gratifying to me in a number of ways during this whole stretch. I mean, their country did a great job on the virus. They were the first major league to come back. They've not had a single positive test that I know of since they've come back, and they've been the blueprint for how to do this right. And then on the side, you've got, well, on the side, just prominently, you've got the protests that we've seen through the players and the support they've gotten and what's happening over there. It's just, I think it's pretty cool.
You know, we're seeing the domestic leagues making these statements, and it's great, good movement, but maybe I'm missing it. You know, maybe I've been too busy with other stuff, but are UEFA and FIFA conspicuous in their silence right now, or what they plan to be doing to make a difference? Because let's be honest here, UEFA in particular have been an absolute disgrace to themselves forever over this exact issue.
So the only statement, Gianni Infantino at FIFA came out and said that he did not think the players in the Bundesliga should be punished for having statements on their shirts that they show when they scored. So that's kind of minimal, but he at least did that. They can do so much more, because FIFA, one of the first things under Infantino, they disbanded their anti-racism task force, basically saying, in effect, racism is solved, but obviously it wasn't. And then UEFA, as you point out, has been shamefully lenient in taking any leadership on punishing racism in stadiums, as have league leaders in, you know, the authorities in Italy, obviously, but other European countries too. You know, in this season, we've seen some really horrible instances. Cagliari's had so many examples now in Italy of racist fans, and they need to go scorched earth on these teams. They need to take away points in the standings. They need to do things that truly hurt these teams. Otherwise, it'll continue to happen.
You know, like it is literally an epidemic over there. And sometimes, Grant, when we're doing European leagues and the UEFA Europa League in particular, you get these smaller clubs in the backwoods of different countries, and on a weekly basis you see something racist, and you almost feel that UEFA is in a position where they're like, if they come down hard on somebody, they're going to have to come down hard on all these other teams, and it's going to become really difficult, because quite honestly, they'll all be playing in front of closed stadiums. It's just absolutely disgraceful, and I don't know if that's part of it, but if they really do come hard on the teams, will that make it better? Will that solve the problem? And can they get away with that?
You know, I think sometimes UEFA wants to let national federations take care of things, and somebody needs to show some leadership. And I am all for scorched earth. I am. I mean, and I hope that we move toward that, in part as a result of what we're seeing happening right now, because just as we all need to get into some uncomfortable situations in recognizing racism, I think UEFA needs to be in an uncomfortable situation where it's like, wow, this seems drastic, but that would be the thing to do, because it hasn't helped what they've done so far.
Grant, so many important issues on today's podcast so far, which need to be discussed. We want to get you back on at some point and talk some football on the field, but we have to get to these topics, of course. Before we let you go, though, I do want to just quickly go back to when you left SI, because so many people, when they get let go by a big corporation, are silenced or intimidated. You went the opposite way. You didn't take their shit. Bottom line, it seemed, through your Twitter feed in particular. I'm sure there's no regrets, but I had a lot of respect for the way you handled it.
Thank you. There's only so much I can say publicly, because my lawyer's be careful here. But what I can say is, at least about my departure, is sort of what I've already put out on my Twitter over time, which is they wanted us. Basically, the people who operate Sports Illustrated now, this group called Maven, were trying to use the pandemic to force pay cuts, not just during the pandemic, which all of us were fine with, including me, but they wanted us to sign long-term contracts that would lock in those pay cuts. So basically, they were trying to use a pandemic to force through permanent pay cuts that would last for years and years. And I had an issue with that and said so publicly. And I got fired by the people who run Maven without severance, without healthcare. And not only that, but they put out a statement, the people who run Maven, not saying, thank you for 23 years of great service, which I'm really proud of. But instead, the statement said false stuff. And I've said this before in my Twitter. They said that I wrote infrequently, which I was the biggest quantity producer on the national staff. I was on pace to write 168 stories in 2020, and they had agreed upon with me 100 at the beginning of the year. So to say that I wrote infrequently, that I didn't work very hard, is flat out false. They said I was the only staffer at Sports Illustrated who was having issues with their permanent pay cut attempt. And that's not factual. There were plenty, there still are, who have issues. And they said that what I did was not meaningful, which anyone who's followed my work for 23 years, I think, would say that that is not factual either. So, that's what happened. And the owners of Sports Illustrated, Authentic Brands Group, have not set the record straight publicly since then. They know what the facts are. They know that statement was wrong. And it's terribly unfortunate. But at the same time, I'm excited to work somewhere else soon full time that respects what I do, respects soccer, because this was also a statement. If you say that my coverage is not meaningful, you're saying soccer is not meaningful to you, Sports Illustrated Maven. Go to a place where you can be valued, and I'm excited about doing that, and I think that'll happen sooner rather than later.
Well, Grant, thanks a lot for coming on. We really do appreciate it. All the best with your podcast and moving forward. We know we're going to see a lot of you moving forward. And all the best, and all the best to your wife, Celine, too. She's doing some amazing work in the medical side of things. We see her regularly on CNN. Absolutely wonderful couple you guys are. So keep up the good work.
Thanks so much, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Grant.
Thanks, Grant. That's Grant. Really interesting. And I suspect, fellas, we'll be seeing him pretty soon. As you alluded to there, Craig. Let's be honest here. You know, we talk about the media in this country, and we have our opinions on this continent. So we have our opinions. We're very fortunate also to have some really talented people covering the game. And Grant's a prime example. I think 26 years, I did the math. 26 years he's been covering the game, I believe, in this country, or close enough anyway, at a very high level. From covering Beckham, he wrote the book, of course, on Beckham's arrival here. Every World Cup, it's, you know, you follow the States, you follow Grant Wall, simple as that. So we are fortunate. There is some talent in this country. Too much of it has been laid bare by the machine, as I mentioned before. I've got to be careful what I say. I've got to be so careful what I say, right? There's so much you want to say, but you can't.
You're not an illegal battle, are you?
No, no, I'm not. No, not anymore. Anyway.
You're just wondering, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
I actually tweeted something out from a corporate standpoint about, you know, like, you know, the dodging of taxes, billions of dollars a year, and it's interesting how even people that I know that work for corporations,
yep,
didn't touch it.
Of course not.
Didn't touch it.
Of course not. Got to watch your back, right? Yeah.
What happens when we're all working for corporations and nobody wants to upset anybody? Because
there's a lot of fear if you work for a corporation. Like, I know a lot of people, and I'm not talking about the obvious here. I know other people in other companies in the media, and they are terrified of saying anything via text, even, because they think that could get back to
my
bosses.
We were in that same position, weren't we? I mean, really, when you're working for and you've got Roger Sportsnet on your Twitter handle, putting out honest statements, personal statements, even though they're coming from yourself, it can be risky.
Yep, absolutely. And there's certain things you can get in trouble for saying because it doesn't follow the corporate mantra,
right?
And you're censored because of that.
But also, a lot of companies and organizations will look through your history on social media as you're approaching a job opportunity or job interview.
Why wouldn't you? If you're hiring somebody, you're going to get a lot of information by their social media. You're going
to, for sure.
You know, if they're Londoners trying to yesterday support and protect the Churchill statue doing the Nazi salutes.
There's a lot of people losing their job over that this weekend. Let me tell you.
No, they should.
Absolutely, so they should be.
Absolutely, disgrace. Absolutely. What's wrong with people, Dan?
People are idiots in most cases.
I think Danny Dicchio should lose his job on this podcast for that beard. I see some gray. This is, if we're talking about...
It's salt and pepper.
You're just jealous, Dan. You're jealous.
Salt and pepper.
Salt and pepper.
I had to say, though, that Grant Wall, when he went, like he talked about scorched earth, he went the exact... When I quit Sportsnet, I resigned from Sportsnet. I never resigned from anywhere in my life. And I looked up how to resign on Google, and all can say the right things. You and I were, Craig and I were talking about it.
Was that Google powered by Rogers at the time?
Yeah, powered by Rogers. Yeah. No, it was at my own house, so I was lucky enough. I didn't do it at work. How to quit. Hey, not the boss, smartest thing to check do. This out. So he went the exact opposite, like 180. He did everything you're not supposed to do. And I have to tell you, according to Google, but according to HR. And it's so funny because I was telling Craig, I did an exit interview. So the 30 minutes to an hour of an exit interview, all of a sudden, the HR woman said to me, can you please, it sounds all very fine. Is there anything you want to leave me with? It sounds like you're holding back. I went, you're absolutely right. And then I went scorched earth. I haven't worked at sports since.
Are you blackballed?
I'm not blackballed. I'm just, hey, we're starting our own thing, fellas.
Yep.
Podcast network, sports podcast network across the board.
And we're getting paid in beer.
That's right.
Which I'm quite okay with.
We're waiting for your resignation from this podcast then.
You're holding something back.
I'm
was.
Actually.
Is that what they ask? I wouldn't even think they would ask that.
Oh, yeah.
They'd be just happy to get your ass out of there as quick as possible.
Now, best, they leave you, they send out the email. Dan Wong is no longer with this company. Future endeavors? Best of the future endeavors, right?
Oh, the old future endeavors.
Hey, we didn't even get that.
We didn't get that, no. I didn't get nothing. In fact,
remember, you went,
it was
6 weeks there.
Later, I bumped into Kyprios, and he's like, oh, how's the soccer going? I'm like, well...
Isn't that like Jerry, where Jerry worked for 60 years at Sportsnet, and he got we went to his mill, and he got that nice letter?
That's right. He was the only guy ever to retire. Yeah. Nobody retires.
Hey,
you
Jerry
get
Dobson,
fired.
Jerry, good friend of ours, timed it beautifully.
Yeah.
Beautifully.
He's sort of writing, writing on the wall, yeah. Jerry.
Oh, he's let it all go, too. His hair is now, he's just dropped a dye.
Yeah, he's just a smoking weed beard. And listening to the dead, isn't he? That's what he's
smoking
doing
smoking weed in Palm Springs every, yeah, for 6 months, and then smoking weed for 6 months of beer.
We know, I said it before, I keep forgetting, we should get Jerry on the show. He'd love to come on, I'm sure, and just talk about his 120 years in the business.
He's my hero.
Yeah, that's right.
Jerry's my hero.
Yeah, he is absolutely the best. All right, listen, let's get into our two guests in one show. How lucky are we, eh? This is a gentleman who's, again, very close to our hearts because he represents beer. And we like beer. In fact, there's lots of beer here. In fact, we are drinking beer. Yes, please. Jeff, can you crack? I've got my hands full. Can you crack one for me? The 3-Speed from Amsterdam. Crispy. Lovely. By the way, I tried the Space Invader. You recommended the Space Invader to me, right?
Yeah.
The IPA. Oh, it's the perfect summer beer. It is juicy, yeah. I'm not sure if it's considered a sour per se, but it tastes like a sour, and I love sours. And yeah, my raging head this morning was courtesy of the Space Invader. Oh. Mm. One second here. Let's introduce our guest. Hang on.
You're right there, Shops.
I'm going to be all right. Director of Sales of Amsterdam Brewery is Rob Mulvihill. Rob, welcome to 30 Prime. I know you're a big Arsenal fan, and we're going to get to the Gunners shortly, but first of all, how has beer sales been through COVID?
Beer sales have been very good. You know, it's funny in our business, when times are good, people drink beer. When times are bad, people drink more beer. So we've had, you know, with the restaurant business being closed, it's not been that great, but home consumption has certainly gone up.
What is the, you know, the staffing like and where your offices are, and how are you guys managing through that, trying to make all this beer? Because obviously the volumes are going to be at a certain level that maybe you didn't even expect.
I mean, the first thing we mandated was, you know, a safety protocol, obviously, to make sure everyone's safe. How are we going to run the business with the people that are there? What are our needs? So there were some layoffs, some redundancies, but we did pretty well overall. And then, yeah, we started to see a spike in packaging. So what happens is our draft business goes away and we have to turn the canning line on a little more. We need more cans. We need more people to pack things out. So it was a bit of a challenge at the beginning. You know, people were worried to come back to work. We weren't forcing anybody. And it's sort of, you know, we set up the safety protocols, social distancing. Everyone's got their own station, lots of sanitization going on. And then we had to bring in some staff. You know, everyone had a bit of an alternate role with home delivery. So we brought some sales reps in who are delivering beer. I was brought in to run, you know, I run the sales routing now for home delivery. You know, so everyone had to sort of chip in, do things a little bit differently, but it's worked out overall fairly well.
Now, we know that you can catch coronavirus from drinking Corona beer. is that the case with Amsterdam? You don't catch.
I cannot verify that in any way. I'm drinking my own little cerveza here. So we've got a summer beer out called Fria Cerveza. Not saying it's an alternate.
Rob, just quickly. So two questions. Why are you an Arsenal fan, first of all? I got a soft spot for Arsenal. My family used to work for Arsenal, so I watched them a lot as a kid. So
right on. Great question. I'll tell you how it came about. Back in 1991, I traveled to London with my then girlfriend, now wife, and we went to her uncle's house in Enfield. We walked into the house and it was filled with cannons. There was cannons everywhere. There was pennants. There was banners. There was these colored jerseys that I had never seen before in my life. And I said, what is this stuff? And he goes, well, this is Arsenal. And I thought that was pretty cool. Kind of my first sort of taste of soccer was with him, you know, as a passionate fan. And it wasn't probably until about 10 years later where he showed up at my house in Toronto. I was living in Lidley, and he's got this Arsenal hat on that said, you know, champions, whatever it was. They won. They just won the three Euro. They won the FA Cup, and they won their own league. So they were the what was it called again? Where they were the Invincibles. And I said, well, that's pretty cool. And so they became my team, and I like, you know, the way they played. That evolved into my love of the Dutch soccer. So a lot of Dutch players came through Arsenal, and I like watching the Dutch team. So, and I just enjoy the game in general. So I hung my hat with Arsenal, and but I do love watching all football.
Cool. Second question now. If you were to describe Arsenal's season in one word.
Tumultuous.
Can you spell that?
That's more syllables. That's more syllables in one word than we generally get through in an entire show.
Can you actually pronounce that, Danny?
No chance I could pronounce that.
You know what?
Tumultuous.
91, that's a George Graham era, right? And 91 yes. was when they were known as Arsenal 1.
Yeah, I was watching them a lot.
Arsenal 1-0. Liverpool 0, Arsenal 1, Man U 0, Arsenal 1. That's all it was. It was a different style of football to Arsene Wenger, certainly. Were you a supporter of Arsene stepping aside finally?
To a degree. I am. I mean, I love, you know, what he's done for that club. He's a brilliant, brilliant manager. But I think the game has changed a little bit, and it was his time. But I think he'll come back in some capacity, you know, as, you know, players start to come back. Players are now managing the team. I think he'll have a bit of more influence, but he needs a bit of time away.
It used to be that you'd often see frequently, you know, beer sponsors emblazoned across football shirts. You know, Holston was what essentially Spurs was known for, right?
Carlsberg,
yeah. Liverpool. I know recent years,
Coors at Chelsea.
Yeah, that's right, Coors. Yeah, when you were there, it was Coors. Yeah.
Guinness,
was
Coors, right? QPR.
Yeah.
When I was
Guinness,
growing up.
Guinness, QPR, yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, nowadays it's far cooler things like, you know,
Nottingham Forest,
hedge funds and stuff, you know, and banks, which is really boring, and the old betting company. But do you foresee a day when Amsterdam will be emblazoned across the front of Arsenal shirts?
Not Arsenal, no. Maybe TFC one day. Never know.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
I got high hopes.
I love a good beer sponsor. And paints. I like paints because I grew up watching Crown Paints.
Crown Paints.
In Liverpool, and it was this, that's the coolest paint. I'm going to buy Crown Paints now.
What was the worst one at Ipswich, like Craig? 10, what was the worst sponsor you had on your jersey? Ipswich or West Ham or Chelsea?
Well, Ipswich, we had Fisons, yeah, which nobody knew.
That's not very good.
Oh, insurance company.
I remember that, Fisons.
Yeah.
That was a nice kit, but it was just a terrible sponsor.
Yeah.
They were local. At West Ham, what did you have at West Ham? Do you have Dagenham Motors for a bit?
Yes.
That was terrible.
Dagenham Motors.
What is that? Dagenham's a place in like London. I've got family living close. There as well, near West Ham.
Yeah. Basically like, sold used cars.
Harry was probably involved with that as well.
Oh, for sure. Harry was.
Delboy signed up with him, right? Harry and Delboy.
Yeah.
But Rob, I mean, do you think there's value though nowadays advertising across football shirts? I mean, obviously advertising's changing so much, you know, integrated marketing, et cetera, but I mean, do you think that is something that we'll see more of or less of?
Absolutely. I mean, the jerseys, you know, the way they get sold now, they become a market amongst themselves. So I don't think it'll ever go away. I just think the affordability for breweries probably not as attractive. We've got now these Asian betting firms, et cetera, that, you know, in Korean letters that you don't understand. So I think it's just a value proposition, that, you know, for most breweries. Can they afford it?
It's a value for money.
Yeah.
Really. Well, I mean, it was at one time, but now these all these betting sites are making so much money.
Well, it's amazing that you're seeing essentially green screens around the size of grounds, right? And they'll sell advertising for the market that's being broadcast in. Which is really something. I wonder how long before.
Who do you think?
The same way.
What team or sport do you think 40 Time the Podcast would be a good sponsor on?
What team?
Yeah. Whose jersey could we get on?
40 Time or 40 Prime?
40 Prime, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm still thinking of Chumachuas.
Footy Prime, what do we personify? We're like, you know, hardworking, a little bit blue collar. Well, at least Danny and me are.
Yeah.
I think that used car.
Community based. We're not Northern, that's for sure.
No.
So if we're an English team, let's break it down to an English team, right? Obviously, you've got a couple of Southerners. You played pretty much in the South your whole career, Craig.
Yeah.
So something South End.
South End, Leighton Orient,
they could do with some money coming in.
Well, so, different sport. What about different sport?
Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well.
No, come on.
Footy Prime. NBA, that little one they have on the...
Yeah. Just to really fuck up the audience.
Yeah. What is that? There is a few out there you don't even know.
It's true.
That's true.
Hmm. It's a good question. Let's ask the listeners.
Yeah.
What sports team should Footy Prime sponsor? Or perhaps the question would be, should Footy Prime sponsor?
Yeah.
Maybe the local five-a-side.
We're like a Stoke. Kind of a Stoke club.
Middle of the pack?
Yeah.
Rob, throwing it back to you, just because.
Sorry, we go off in tangents, Rob. Can you tell?
So, when are you guys going to be open again at your brew house and your restaurants? Because we want to do a remote, and we'd love to figure out how to do that with you. So,
this is called a pitch.
It isn't just a pitch. It's more of a it's ambitious,
live show,
and optimistic.
From the brewery,
but let's say you know Ford's provincially. Ford's saying in the next 2 weeks we're going to phase two. You guys are obviously planning for phase two.
Absolutely, yeah.
When football starts up with MLS, we want to be there, and we'd love to work with you. But how are you guys going about it? Tell me that. That's an interesting.
Yeah, we've again more plans with social distancing. Don't understand yet what the parameters are. They haven't released the guidelines, but we understand it'll be a limited capacity with the opportunity to extend beyond your current patio. So we could end up. We've got lots of walkway space down there. We've got lots of patio in general, so we're fortunate from that sense. But it's a big facility, so you know you need a lot of staff. You need a big kitchen operation, and you need people to turn numbers through there. So. I think we'll follow the guidelines and we'll open as soon as we can. The target, I think, is next Friday. We hope to hear an announcement on Monday or Tuesday this week. But, we'd love to have you guys down there in some capacity, for sure. There's room to do some, and I think it'd be a lot of fun.
So you heard it here. Next Friday, we could be enjoying a live show from Amsterdam Brewery.
Am I mistaken? I thought we were in phase three already.
It's still tumultuous, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm still tumultuous.
Tumultuous. Well, listen, Rob, thanks so much for joining us. This is what we kind of do. We go off on various tangents, but we really appreciate the support you've given us. We are certainly purveyors of your finest. We love the three-speed. I mentioned the Space Invader. I've got three blondes on my deck right now, hopefully, and beer.
We need to get a little symbol in there.
There's three blondes. There's two blondes, but they're my daughter and my wife.
Anyway. A three speed, but that's good enough.
Yep, absolutely. Rob, thanks so much, mate. Appreciate it.
Thank you,
this.
Rob.
All right, guys. Thanks to meet you. Cheers.
Thank you.
That's Rob Mulvihill of Amsterdam Brewery. All right, fellas, we're running out of time here, but we have to quickly mention, of course, this Wednesday, I believe, is kickoff for the Premier League.
Yes.
And they've left the marquee matchup for the first match of the kickstart. Sheffield United, Aston Villa.
Cracker. What a cracker. Big Actually, it's a big game for Villa.
It's a huge game, I know. And we shouldn't forget what a campaign the Blades have had. The Blades have had this incredible season so far. And I think we forget just how they've surprised us all so far, moving this far forward.
Fantastic. And they've got a really good coach in charge as well, a guy that... You can tell the players love to play for. He's very honest. He's very open with his dialogue, even in his like team talks after, not his team talks, his media press conferences after the game. He'll say how it is, and players feed off of that. But what he's done with that club, they haven't bought in big money signings. they've got a very tight-knit group that really did well in the championship the year before, and now they're really playing well. They remind me a lot of the Sunderland team I went up with in like 98, 99, and we were a very tight-knit group. We didn't have any superstars. We had guys that played in and around the Premier League, Championship, done very well, but we built that team spirit and that togetherness for about 16 months, 18 months in the Championship, and it really helped us when we went through to the Premier League, and we had to punch above our weight for a long, long time, and Sheffield United have done that this year, and they could possibly end up in Champions League still.
Oh, absolutely. I'm telling you, yeah, that race is incredible.
They could possibly end up in Champions League, which would be, for me, would be a fantastic season. We speak about Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp with what he's done with them, but for Wilder to take Sheffield United into the Champions League, he has to get manager of the year.
Oh, well, I was going to say, at this point, he's obviously in contention for it. There's no doubt. And I think I would probably give it to him. As much as, you know, Klopp's done a great job, he's got different finances around him. What Wilder's done in the first year back in the Premier League, playing that style of football too. They're not, you know, this isn't Neil Warnock's United, who did really well too. This is a team that plays football.
Yeah, it's interesting, the different philosophies of teams that come up and you know, the ones that decide to spend money, but you're looking for some added quality going in the Premier League, which is important, but you're also disrupting the dressing room potentially. Mm. And the ones that do that, like I think Wilder's really challenged the players. So, okay, we're going to stick with you. We're going to challenge you, and I'm going to call you out when you should be finishing chances, because at this level, you have to be doing that.
Yeah. And he's done that with his goalkeeper, who he loves, by the way, the boy they've got on loan from Man United. He's made a mistake. The goalkeeper's made a mistake. He knows it. I know it. And it's cost us. Mm-hmm. And players really thrive off that. They thrive off that honesty, because a lot of stuff will be said in the changing room, the locker room, and then the manager will go and say a totally different message to the press and to the fans afterwards. And there you're already kind of separating yourself from your team, who are going out on the field, on the pitch, to fight for you and to fight for your job at the end of the day. If you haven't got the trust of those players, done. And he's got that from this team. So, as I said, they play really nice football. They're very flexible. They play three at the back. They go to four at the back. And they keep teams guessing. And they play with no fear, which is what I like as well, Shams. They've gone to Anfield and fought and played very well, progressively pressing. They've done it at Man United as well. And they'll end up losing games. We know that. That's what happens to teams when you're playing against high level quality teams.
Fear would be a great topic one week, actually. Fear in football. In a variety of, you know, different scenarios, but certainly promoted teams. Some teams clearly are terrified when they come up. Others aren't. So that would be a good topic to get
individuals
to at some point. Individuals, too, who can hack it in the lower leagues.
But well, you know, and too, it's one thing shitting yourself before a big match. Like, I mean, I honestly, like, the anxiety before a match was just intense.
Were you a puker?
Nope. Wasn't a puker.
But you would feel it. Like when you woke up that morning, you'd feel, really, for
2 days before.
Really?
Yeah. Thursday, Friday, I was just shut down. Like, it was useless.
Once you got on that field, did it just go away?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's interesting, isn't it? How? Because, I mean, I understand that at different levels.
A lot of the thinking is, James, too, is you're thinking of the end result. Like, as you want, you're starting at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, and you're finished at 5. You're thinking of the result at 5, and you want it to be a positive result. But you don't never, what doesn't go through your head is the process to get to that 5 o'clock result. You know, you have to go through the process, and everything's doesn't come at you at once, right? So psychologically, it's important to remember that it's not coming all at you at once. Every event isn't happening at once. It's all happening individually.
It's also different for a keeper, right? Because as an out player, you're surrounded by your teammates. You know, you're as good as they are. Whereas you're on the spot. You have to have a flawless match, essentially, to get a result in most cases, right?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Deitch used to... Were you nervous, Deitch, coming onto the field or before the field?
I used to get butterflies, in your stomach. Yeah. But I feel if you're a pro athlete and you don't have butterflies before a game, then you're either very, very strange, which some pro athletes are, or you don't have a feeling for the game. You should have that kind of excitement. No, it's not fear, it's an excitement, a butterfly, a build up to, you're going into an occasion to not only play the game, but to entertain people that have paid to get into the stadium.
Yeah.
So you should have that. excitement. You should have that the butterfly feeling.
And one
in
thing
your
about
stomach.
That feeling, DJ, is like I was singing it the other day. It was probably the most alive, that I've ever felt in my life before games, because you got all these senses coming through you, like everything flying through you, and you're just so alert about what's going on.
What were you
on.
Like in the room when you got in there to, you know, get your socks on, get your shorts and get geared up? Were you just in your own little space there? Or cause some guys become very always bigger than themselves, right? And then they're loud and they're joking. That's how they deal with the pressure.
That's right.
How were you?
Yeah. No, I wasn't like that. But I wasn't introverted either, but I was certainly not. You're thinking of your role and your job and, you know, what's going to happen over the next period of time.
You're a DJ, right? And you teach?
Was that, I used to do all the mixtapes and stuff for the music. So there were certain coaches that liked having music on in the changing room before games. And there were certain coaches that just liked guys to be in the mood. But again, I go back to, if a coach understands his team and what they need and what they want, then he has to be brave enough and strong enough to let the players police that change room, that locker room. Because at the end of the day, they're the group that are going to go out on the field and get that result. So, yes, there has to be parameters. There has to be certain rules within the change room, the locker room. But most of the guys were very self-disciplined. I was a guy that liked, for some reason, I liked hitting myself before going on the field.
Hitting yourself?
Yeah, because I knew that I was going to get...
It doesn't surprise me. Does it surprise you?
I knew that I was going to get a lot of knocks and stuff as soon as... So I don't want to be surprised by the first hit.
You know what? It's funny. Rugby, that's what you do before in the warm-up, right? Yep. You are like, you're bouncing off people.
Yeah.
Because you've got to get a few stings and a few bruises to get in that, mate. I mean, obviously, it's with the other team in my case, which is a bit frustrating. But
I always... So, Mega Mix.
No, hey, come on. Well, listen, James, you might want to put our shirt on.
Mega Mix 97 with Dickio. There's always one song. So, I was a DJ, too, back in university. There's always one song that you have consistently on a Mega Mix. What was your song?
It depends on the year as well.
No, it doesn't matter, because there's always one jam that... You know, like, there's always a jam that you go, oh, you know what? That was the most frequent jam.
It really depended on the year and the changing room, the locker room as well. Because if we had vets, they wouldn't like what us young'uns were listening to as well.
But 98 Sunderland.
The first vinyl record I bought when I was DJing was Pump Up the Jam.
Pump Up the Jam.
Pump Up the Jam. Wow. So that
Pump it up.
Like I listened to that like five, six years ago, and I'm like, this is a terrible song.
Box, right?
Now I listen to it now, and like even my daughter, she's like, this is a jam, Dad. I'm like, oh my
was
God.
Was that Black again. Box?
It was No. It was Technotronic.
So Black Box is Pump Up the Volume. No. Yeah. Who's Black Box?
Black Box Pump Up the Volume.
It is, right?
No, Black Box was Ride on the Wave or something like that. Well, wow, we're going back to 90s dance music now.
Jeff's on the case.
Yeah, it's a thing. You're playing, say, 98, and you got a guy that's like, is, you know, listening to Led Zeppelin.
Yeah. There was, right? So
be
your mix
guy,
had to be
like 20 years older
very
than you.
Different and cater to the whole group rather than just for the young'uns in the corner that are bouncing away to it. But the experienced guys in the other corner are pissed off because it's just headache music to them. So
we should have a pre-pod soundtrack. What would be on it?
A lot of Ska. A
lot of Ska, right?
A lot of Ska. Yeah,
a lot of specials. The specials. Madness.
Yeah.
Just put like these.
Some disco. I love disco.
One step beyond.
Any luck there, Jeff?
Are we actually still on?
I know. Hey, well, Jeff's got the answer to our Black Box issue.
It's not Black Box.
Right on time, what's that?
I'll give somebody literally every cent I have on me right now, which is upwards.
Pump Up the Volume, Mars.
Ah! Yes! Oh, yes!
Who? Who?
Pump Up the Volume, Mars.
I owe Dickio some money.
I don't want your money, Jeff. I don't want your money. No. Just give me beer. Just give me beer. I'll have beer instead.
Right, we should probably go because we're an hour 10 in or something, according to the recorder, which means that Dan's life tomorrow is a nightmare getting uploaded. Listen, our thanks to Grant Wall, who was outstanding today and obviously had to deal with some very important issues, and we'll continue to do so. But at some point, we'll get Grant back on. We'll talk football. And of course, Amsterdam Brewery, thank you so much for supporting us and in our little way, we'll support you. Because I have bought some beers in recent weeks as well from you. In fact, there's actually you can follow the car tracks from the brewery to my house because of the delivery. It's fantastic.
I never have to pay,
yeah. Not now.
Never.
I know. Yeah. I know, but I'm a raging alcoholic.
So am I.
Standing in line at the LCBO with all the other losers.
Yeah. Oh,
by mistake.
You know what? Actually.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was at the fucking Loblaws. I went to the grocery shopping. I'm standing there for like 20 minutes. I'm like, Jesus.
What, was you in the returns queue?
No, I was in the LCBO line.
So you thought you were at Loblaws?
I'd love to have
Did
seen
you stay
that.
In there or, and pretend or film you're supposed it. To be there and
Yeah, for like 20 minutes. And I was like, excuse me. Is this to get in the grocery store? No, it's the LCBO. I was like, oh.
20 minutes.
20 yeah. minutes.
You're on TV.
Yeah.
I was. Yeah, you're like, yeah, I just want to get some wine, actually, before I get my
yeah, that's right, yeah.
Well, I'll go pick up my shreddies. I would stay in that line just to kind of look like I'm supposed
yeah,
to be in that line.
That's what
you
did.
You did,
yeah? I did. That's why I was in there. I was like, you told me after 10, but I was kind of like, how do I drift away?
I'm that person who, like, you know, walks down the street and will pass the stories going in, but rather than stop and turn around, I'll just keep walking, you know,
yeah.
pretend I'm supposed to be going somewhere else, you know, popping somewhere else. It's pathetic.
Yes. Pathetic.
It's pathetic. All right, we're out of time. It's tumultuous. That's a tumultuous thought,
word
isn't it?
Word of the week.
How do we spell that?
Yeah, we should do a spelling bee.
No.
Spelling bee.
No.
Is that what they call it?
No, but Danny.
Oh.
Spell B.
Remember that kid that passed out? He had this massive word and he passed out. He faked it. And then he got up and he did it.
Yeah, I remember that one.
It's a lot of pressure on those kids. It's ridiculous.
Well, he gave it one of these and he gave it the old wobble and he went down.
Yeah.
But then he got up and rattled it off.
Nailed it.
Nailed it.
Which is ridiculous because
so
head
I
injuries.
I think he took a dive.
He should have gone into the quiet room.
More time.
I think he had it in his pocket. He fooled us all. Yeah.
Yeah, you think it was just felt down?
He had it written in his head. Yeah. The hardest word ever.
I think the way spelling bee organizers deal with head injuries is pathetic nowadays. In this day and age, they should take these kids away to the quiet room for a little while, make sure they're not concussed, then bring them back. It's like, get back up there, son. It's terrible, isn't it?
Oh, you mean the concussion bees. Protocol?
Yeah.
All right.
The spelling bees.
Spelling bees.
Well, this
a
poor
concussion
kid.
Protocol. It if you be. Do go down and hit your head.
You cannot continue or, until we assess you.
I could be in a little side tent. Room with a cricket bat.
What's that?
I could be in a little side room with a cricket bat.
Make sure it's concussed.
No.
I can't believe
if you
want
to send him
yourself.
Off the stage to me in that little room with a cricket
I'd
bat.
I'd hit him. If you, hey?
Punch me. I was a masturbator. Caught me down, whacked me before I track me against Donovan.
Yeah,
Daly
look at you like now.
4x100 fastest guy.
So that's why you were never there, eh? You weren't there in Atlanta.
You ran against Donovan Bailey.
Glenroy Gilbert.
Oh, yeah. Mark McCoy?
No, he was.
Is he a little bit older, maybe, right?
Turtles.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He was, yeah.
Is there any way we can get some video or visual of that? Because I'd love to see that.
Can you picture it? As much as you're probably pretty quick, you weren't that quick.
I wasn't Super Brother quick.
No.
For sure.
He was like fifth alternate.
Like, he'd be caught up.
if he goes down and he goes down and that whole village goes down, that's it. You get a chance to run.
Yeah. I want to see video of that. Absolutely.
Yeah, that'd be
that's
good.
Cool, though. That's a great story. Wow.
Didn't know.
Maybe Canada's greatest athlete ever. Not you, Donovan Bailey.
Yeah. And then he met beer and women and
life got better.
Life got better, yeah. Yeah.
All right, we should definitely go now.
Are we still on?
I think so, yeah. DeanBlundell.com. Thanks, Dean, mate, for supporting us as well, and we'll support you, and you should join us one of these days. You won't be drinking beer, but you'll definitely be consuming other substances. All right, until then, next week. Cheers. Bye.
Ciao, ciao.
What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening and back to the show.